Hi, so I'm hoping to keep it casual, so if people have questions from the audience, like, you're welcome to respond, or if you have comments, yeah, just raise your hand. So, do you need me to project?
I think it's okay, Kelly. It's being picked up by the mic, but maybe just make sure you sort of talking towards the audience as well as towards the guests. Just the kind of balance between the two.
I'm cheating, I guess. Then, of course.
Okay, so I guess I want to start off by getting both of your thoughts on the film, and if you had seen it before, if you watched it previously. I know you're familiar with Barbara McCullough. I don't know if how familiar you are with the L.A. Rebellion, or how much the audience is, but basically the L.A. Rebellion was this film collective of black filmmakers sort of defined in retrospect. But they all came out of the UCLA film school, and they operated mainly from the 1960s to the late 1980s into the early 90s. And essentially, the thing that sort of defined them, they all sort of knew each other and collaborated with each other. But they also worked to recoup images of blackness. They were very dedicated, I would say, to showing the mundaneness of blackness as opposed to other films, which sort of traditionally made a spectacle out of black characters. So yeah, to you guys, how did you feel about the film?
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. I think that the points for me that, I guess thinking about my own practice as well, but the points that really kind of shine out to me was the understanding, or the cohesive understanding of the purpose of why. So what I mean by that is, you know, the balance between activism and the music, the understanding of the music being what I call like a form of a telephone, which is the transmission of information between ancestral ideas and spirit into the present and as a means of connection. And then also I was very interested in the whole idea of convergence. So, you know, the idea of taking the music and then the idea of the music being kind of like the nucleus or the central space. And then through that you have the whole idea of like introducing poets to the environment, or like the whole idea of artists between mediums almost being responsive to each other, each other's work. I found that for me, that's what, beyond obviously Horace and his incredible work, that's what stood out to me at this point at least the most. Yeah.
So you made the film, the first film?
Yes. Yeah.
That was fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, I'll ask you about that for
So that your film was made recently?
Yes, last year.
And the Barbara McCullough film was made
2017, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Right. But she'd been shooting for like
for
a while, like since the late 70s. She was shooting that piece.
Well, my interest, which I imagine why it was suggested, is the music that Horace Tapscott came out of, which is sort of post-civil rights jazz music from about 1965 onwards. And I think that this was African-American jazz musicians redefining themselves, their persona from entertainers into something different, which was they tried to absorb the all the sort of redefining aspects of the civil rights movement. And Horace Tapscott is one. He's from Los Angeles, and he's one of the least known, I would say. And it's kind of interesting because he came out of basically these communities of which he centered himself happened all around America at this time. So you had the Arts Ensemble in Chicago, Black Artist Group in St. Louis, Tribe in Detroit, Sun Ra doing his own sort of communal thing. And he describes his music at the end as uninstitutionalized, and I think that I think he's sort of the most extreme of that, in the sense that he didn't really integrate with the mainstream music industry at all. He made a couple of records on Flying Dutchman in the early 70s, and his music did come out on a little independent label called Nimbus, I think. But they don't really reflect his career in a way that I think this film does. And I think it's quite fascinating because it's literally, I couldn't really get that history of him up until this film, and it's completely defining someone who's, you know, his agenda is so focused on what he's doing, and it's completely right. You know, he's a completely centered person, making music for the right reasons, and knowing why he's doing it, and yet almost completely unknown. And it's almost like they're going together, this sort of community-based centeredness, the antithesis of the music industry, which, you know, I'm sure he doesn't have an agent, a manager, a PR company. And I don't know whether that's... I don't know what I think of that, really, because it just seems it's just odd that he's so little known, and yet he's so clearly a centred musician doing the right thing. You know, Pharoah Sanders, John Coltrane, that even they're integrated because they worked with, you know, they were Impulse, one of the largest record companies in the world. So whilst their music is radical, they still had to, to an extent, institutionalise themselves in the way that Horace Tapscott doesn't. And I think that that's a real strength in his in him.
Yeah. It's interesting what he said though in the film that when they were talking when he was asked about did he think of any alternative careers and like even him mentioning about
architecture
you know, almost it was too institutionalized. You know, and obviously naturally one of the reasons why he didn't do it was because of the nature of the society at the time, but it's interesting how he's reconciling doing what he potentially would have wanted to do to what institutionalization and not being too interested in that. I don't know.
He's also very rooted in community as well. And so much of the film, so much of his purpose was so grounded in his devotion to community and his belief in, which I think is also very true of Barbara McCullough and all of the LA Rebellion filmmakers, this idea that by being in charge of narratives, you could like recoup images, you could recoup stories and heal a community. It was all very much about, it wasn't independent in a way. So in a sense, I definitely agree with what you're saying. I don't know if you would argue that maybe I think he's not necessarily, or he wasn't after personal recognition. He believed in what he was doing because he thought that there was something healing about it, that there, like, it wasn't about his success so much as what his music could then, what would happen in communication or dialogue with somebody else who was listening to his music. And I was going to ask you that. Essentially, you've answered my question about like what was his status in the jazz scape, so to speak. But if I'm not mistaken, did you program some of his music for like Soul of a Nation at tape?
Okay, so my record company puts together theme sort of areas of music and discusses them rather than recording new artists. So and a lot of that is jazz music from this period of time, and for the Soul of a Nation exhibition, the guy asked me to essentially he was trying to find the connection between art that was coming out of civil rights movement and music, and seeing if there was a link, which I explained that I thought there wasn't.
I disagree.
No, not in terms of what they were doing, but he wouldn't know if it was personal links, like were painters making music and were music. Anyway, that was the basis.
Do you mean like in terms of mediums where like artists responding to each other's work?
Whether they were the same groups of people.
Oh, I see.
Because you're right. Is when there was a lot of cross-pollinization of different art forms. Going on at that, sorry, I was being a little bit pedantic. I don't mean it literally, but yes, that's the. And I just, the only reason I'm saying is that it's slightly not ashamed, but the fact that he is so centred and is so outside of this industry meant that for someone in a different time frame and a different country, it's a little hard to know who Horace Tapscott is, you know, which is a bit of a shame. But this this film does that, so it's, you know, it's taken a while.
It's interesting. It kind of like feeds into a wider understanding of even what success is. You know, like for me, it's just very much like if you have your mind on the revolution, that's. I mean, you know, whether it's like overtly or like, you know, like subvertly, like that is. It takes up everything, you know, and then it kind of renders all the ideas of success on a economic or a capitalist centered understanding of success. It just kind of pushes it to the side. And I think in a way, in an interesting way, it's kind of like when you look at the LA rebellion, you know, the work that was coming out of that, it's more like it's rooted in a need to see images in ways that Hollywood wasn't satisfying.
Well, this is brings me to my next question, because I have a sense that you were probably influenced a lot by the films of the LA Rebellion, and this idea of like, because one of the things that I feel about those films is that, again, like them showing blackness as this very like ordinary thing, black people living their lives, just communicating with each other and simply existing and not necessarily having to struggle or go through like these big, you know, sort of, I mean, this is very much a part of black life as well, these economic and institutional strife, but I also really appreciate all of these images of black joy and black people celebrating life, and I wanted to know if that's true. Were you influenced by the LA Rebellion at all, or
in some senses? I wouldn't say I was influenced. I wouldn't say I was influenced by the work itself. So I went to film school in America. My directing professor was Haile Gerima, so he was one of the you know, forefathers, but he was one of the members of the LA Rebellion. And so I would say the rebellion influenced me on that level, so more on a political level, and on a level of reasoning as to why. But in terms of actually looking at the work and being directly influenced on that level, not so much.
Because I could see that they seemed the same part of the same path, and yet there's so, as I say, you've made it in Britain last year, and it's that's what I thought was really good, and, you know, the mixing of music and dance, and so the Kendrick Lamar installation that was is that connected to it, was the, because it,
no,
who were the film,
it was, that was for the Hayward Gallery,
yeah,
so that for, connected to Arthur Jaffa,
was it connected to Arthur Jaffa, which you said the Kendrick Lamar one,
Yeah, it's like a two,
that's Khalil Joseph's one,
that is cool,
I think you're the Arthur Jaffa one you're speaking of is Love Is The Message, so they're two separate ones. But interestingly, the artist you're talking about, Arthur Jaffa, have made a film together as well.
Right. Well, to me, because it seems the same language, and it seems the same sort of linear path. And I'm sure, you know, I'm sure
there's crossovers.
Kendrick Lamar and Horace Tapscott would have made something together.
Was there a question for the in the audience? Yes. Sorry, I thought I missed a hand. Sorry, maybe go on.
Yeah. No, I agree. I don't mean, what I mean is Nimbus is an impulse, you know, it's not, it was a, as you say, it's set up for Horace Tapscott, it's a small independent label, you know, like, I don't know whether it's got has distribution in the UK, and also I think that what I noticed when I was watching the film was I could hear his music in a way that I don't really hear on his records, in the sense that, you know, you're, I mean, I really like the music, you know, it's sort of, you know, he never really talks about it, but there's something going on, sort of very Afrocentric, not left field, but just something quite unique and special and quite very well captured. I don't know whether he's captured it very well or he's always doing it, which I don't quite get on his, from his back catalogue, you know, and his, you can't really grasp his, I don't think, his musical path from the way it's documented on record, which is just, you know, I'm not token marking in terms of success. I think he seems incredibly happy doing the right thing. I just think as a record as a document of or communication to other people, I'm not sure it's completely as resolved as he appears to be. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think the guy behind it,
Well, we've licensed some stuff from Nimbus.
There's nothing written about him.
It's really quite odd how undocumented it is, and I think he describes it in terms of Los Angeles as opposed to New York. But even, you know, the Art Ensemble or Julius Hemphill, you know, they're quite, you read about them, you don't really read about him. It's really odd.
It's like what he was saying as well in terms of I think it was when Greg Tate was asking him as well, like in terms of that, and he was like, you know, people learn about you through reading like articles and stuff, and he said, you know, not in that in that space, and so by virtue of people not, I mean, because even looking online, the biggest piece of writing I've found on him so far is like his obituary. You know, it's not any one particular article written, you know, whilst he was alive that like really gives you a sense of him in ways that maybe you couldn't get through his music.
And he was determined to stay still in Los Angeles, because I think he says, like, well, I have to be here, I have to do the work here. I thought another interesting thread in the film was this idea of rapport and dialogue with, like, with history, with ancestors. He was very much, like, into, from the images, like, he seemed very much to endorse this idea of both Pan-Africanism, but also this, like, regionless way of, like, you know, he was very, like, universal and egalitarian in the way that he believed. It's so, there's something so pure and wholesome about that, like, because, you know, it's very easy to, like, to, as you say, be a part of these divisions and belong to a New York scene, and I just wondered if that was something that you guys, like, considered or thought about at all, or were interested in.
Well, I also thought it was, I thought that what was good is this centeredness, and is what what is presented is his, as you say, his community, but also his family, also his musical tutors. You know, he's a very he's a very upright guy. He's doing the right thing. At the same time, he is the guy who did the music for Elaine Brown. You know, it's one of the few Black Panther records they ever made. You know, he was, I can't remember. I'm sure he said somewhere that, not in this, that he used to the house, the UGMA, which he's talking about, which is like a music workshop space, shared, like, upstairs were the Black Panthers, which is all the people that you'd see. And you know, this is late 60s, this is the, I mean, half of them are going to get killed. You know, it's literally heavy, seriously politically charged arena that he's in, and he's, at the same time, he's got these sort of Afrocentric, very centered notions of what it is to be a musician in society and as part of a wider family, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good.
Mm. I think like the your question, it's almost like it points closer to where I was at the beginning of the conversation when I was talking about like, I mean, like, you know, even the idea of the Pan-African People's Orchestra, you know, like that. And I just feel that he very much, like, it's just a personal feeling, but, like, you know, looking for, in his work and in his approach to his work, looking for ways of connecting past, present, future.
You know,
his connection, his... it's ancestral conversation, almost, like that's the one to describe his music as that. So, yeah.
Another, they don't show this image, but the interviewer at the end or near the end, he says, like, you were playing so hard that there was, like, blood on the keys. It's really striking, even though you don't see that visualized in the film. I was so like that, the idea of like being so swept up in something that's so transcendent in a way is a really like, I don't know, you sort of like hope for that kind of passion and like, you know, what's the word that I'm looking for, that this just being so oblivious to everything outside, being so like,
you hope for your own life.
Yes.
So in spirit, you know, you kind of transcend.
Exactly. Yeah. I guess my question about that would: do you guys feel that way about music or film? Have you ever would you describe your passion for these things and like maybe not so much that you like bleed or hurt yourself, but I don't know.
I do, definitely.
Or creativity, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
For me, definitely. It might not. It's not a literal blood on the keys, but it's that same level of like, I mean, I'm a filmmaker, so there's a level of rigor that's attached to that and perseverance, and the type of work that I'm creating is that space, you know. I'm constantly thinking about the ideas of spirit, what that is. I was talking to a friend recently, the whole idea of even like just like, it's like a space of, if I can even call it this, like spiritual privilege, you know, like trying to enter. For me, music is a portal, just generally, and I try to express that, or I try to get the film. My film that you saw is, you know, it unfolds, in, you know, directly the way it does in my mind's eye. You know? And it's like I see it. I don't know how to explain it. Sometimes I find the English language limiting in like how I want to express myself, but it's like a portal, you know, within which to kind of open, you know, ourselves up to bigger ideas and to connect back and connect forward and also situate us in the now. So yeah, I definitely have that. I mean, I lose myself in what I'm doing for sure. So on that level,
yeah.
Would you? Yes, I mean, as an amateur piano player and flute player, I can. So it's not hard to see where what's going on, but just get a bit jealous wishing I could do it to the level that they're doing.
Yep, go ahead.
Two wonderful films, thank you. Just to take up what you've already said, but just add one little bit to it, is that this idea of redeeming what's been lost, what's been suffered, trying to transform that, but also to redeem what's been paid by his mother, his family.
Yeah.
You know, this seemed to be what was the recompense he was looking for.
Yes.
Through the actual practice of every day, learning something, transmitting something, and transforming himself every day through the practice, was this notion of a kind of redemption of what's lost. And then I just thought with your wonderful film, I thought there was a kind of queer trajectory through it, and I couldn't help with the angel, the blue angel. I couldn't help but think of, you know, Isaac Julian, but also Kerethwyn Evans, and that a certain Kerethwyn Evans' early film work, when he was working with Lee Bowery and Michael Clarke, for instance. I just wondered if you know this work, or whether it was in any way, or just you came to the same.
No, I don't. But this is what's interesting about what you're saying is. And even what you were saying, Stuart, as well, is that, like, sometimes I feel like all these ideas and thoughts that we're all having, like, individually kind of, like, are thrown up into the sky, you know, and they're collecting in some sort of, energetically, there's some sort of connection, and it's, like, feeding back down, because when I made this work, there was a lot that I've talked about post-making, or a lot has been asked from me, or I've been discussing post the work that weren't in my weren't on my periphery, or I wasn't referencing, you know. But it's interesting how I just kind of decided that piece is that I'm just going to do as I feel, and that was the only thing I was serving, was how I felt. You know, not expectations of, like, length, not expectations of, you know, cost. It was like, how do I feel? I have to transmit this in the purest way. And then it's post that, then you have the more intellectual conversations, and then you have the more referential conversations. But in the time, that was just, you know, it was what, you know, it's almost like what Horace was talking about, like, you know, you're having these ancestral conversations, you know, and, you know, you're kind of like just in a space where you're listening. I was listening a lot more than I was speaking at the time. So, yeah, that's interesting.
I think we're going to have to wrap it up. But thank you guys for coming. I hope you enjoyed the films. Yeah. And thank you to Jan and Stuart as well. And
thank
Michael and Matthew and Beamy.
I saw you coming in.
Nice to meet you. Matthew also sounds like he would be like an old white man. This is when I before
the name Barrow.
Yeah, that's what it is. I always think about that with your image.
It's my slave name. Maybe I should change it. Yeah, probably change it.
Yeah, Matthew
Wyatt. Maybe it's Wyatt.
Because you know what it is, he's like emails so many people.
Yeah.
Or you email so many more people than you actually ever meet.
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
Never
met.
Yeah.
So I'm always like, who was I talking to?
Yeah.
People do have their faces, though, aren't they?
But not everyone.
I also feel like that's so weird. Like, I wouldn't even know. Like, if I don't know. I wouldn't do that. I would always be like, do you want. Sometimes I email people that I don't want to know. Yeah.
I don't want you to know what I look like.
Yeah, no, I don't want you to know what I look like.
Just give me that refund.
That'd be really easy to do that.
So at least, like,